You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spine number 76, Razorback, and an onslaught of Ozploitation oddities. Featuring The Outback, Killer Pigs, Dead Babies, Dicko and Billy, Walkabouts, Grimy Locals, Numerous Beers, Gorgeous Photography, Reckless Poachers, Kangaroo Carcasses, and Duran Duran. Martin.
Yeah.
One fight, and you're a hamburger. Welcome back to another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin.
Yes.
You kind of picked this movie after we've threatened our audience with an Ozploitation episode for what seems like years now. Mm-hmm. Why is Razorback the defining Aussie genre film for you?
I just think it's so, I hate using this word, extra. It is
sure
visually, musically, like, giant monsterly, one of the craziest movies. And every time I watch this or show it to a friend, they're like, wait, what am I watching? Because you pitch it. Most of the time this movie is pitched as Jawsploitation, which it is.
That was going to be my next question for you, because it's so tied to American cinema in a way.
Yeah, and like you and I did a couple summers ago, we're both big shark movie fans. We might talk a little bit later about Dangerous Animals, a new shark movie from Australia, which is wonderful.
Incredible movie.
Incredible. And they have a lot of shark movies as well, like The Reef and killer monster stuff like Black Water, same director, Andy Trauke. But this one, you have a really strange first feature from Russell Mulcahy, who had done music videos for Duran Duran and other stars and 80s kind of pop bands, before going to make kind of his big main film people remember him for, which is Highlander, and kind of starting that franchise. But this movie I love because when I often think about subgenres of horror, I love that even when they're trying to copy one-to-one and say, okay, we're going to do, you know, our version of Jaws, it can't help but have its own personality. And I think a lot of that comes from the Australian backdrop of this movie, which is really almost like, what if Jaws were a razorback and were placed in Wake and Fright? Because the setup is quite similar to Wake and Fright. Basically, the birth of the Ozploitation boom coming to the West, right?
Well, that and Night of Fear.
Agreed.
Are the two. Like,
yeah,
Night
exactly.
of Fear is almost like the Australian kind of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre to a certain degree.
Yeah.
That will be replicated by Greg McLean with Wolf Creek.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
We've seen Ozploitation kind of echo through generations to a certain degree, right up until, like you said, like Dangerous Animals. I mean, even, you know, the Filippo brothers, who we've been watching with Talk to Me and Bring Her Back, which Bring Her Back is incredible if you haven't seen that one.
Showstopper.
Yeah.
Amazing movie.
But I totally agree with how the backdrop of almost like the Outback kind of makes it the most distinct in Mulcahy's kind of filmography because he moves on. Now, I have a question for you because it came up while I was revisiting this on the new kind of umbrella 4K. Is Russell Mulcahy the Australian Ridley Scott?
Visually, yes, but it's hard to separate from he's had a pretty rough later career.
Sure.
So in terms of like the obviously Scott never dipped below a level of quality, but I do agree with his like background.
We've all seen 1492.
Well, but we've also seen whatever Kill 'Em Malone or whatever. Or whatever, or like
sure, or Resurrection,
or Silent Trigger with Dolph Lundgren, and I love my Dolph. That's a bad fucking movie, right?
But
and,
at the same time, Ricochet fucking rules,
right?
With Denzel and John Lithgow.
No, and like he, and I think if maybe not to to speak for you, but coming from an advertising or music video background, purely visual. And if you look at early Ridley Scott, you look at like The Duelist, you look at early Tony Scott, like The Hunger.
Yeah.
I would put this in that same kind of vein. It's like more visual than it is narrative. The storytelling is kind of not great, but it's a pretty simple story to follow all the same. But it really just drops you into this really like sweat-soaked world.
Beer swilling,
neon colors, perpetual magic hour, like walkabout, mystic, like weird avant-garde at times movie, right?
Well, yeah, because it almost becomes like a Nick Rogue movie in the middle.
100%.
Because it's not quite bifurcated, but there's almost two narratives at play. It's weird. It's like we compare it to Jaws in terms of the animals attack elements of it, but it's also sort of like Psycho in my recent rewatch. What I was thinking about is that it's about, you know, a guy lets his girlfriend, his partner go overseas. She's covering a story basically about like kangaroo poachers,
yeah,
more or less. And she gets attacked by a killer pig and he has to hunt her down or like figure out what happened to her. And it's like our protagonist almost becomes abergast to a certain degree.
Yeah.
You know? And that was the thing that like rewatching it struck me the most is because this is written by Everett DeRoche, one of
he wrote everything.
Like biggest scribe of the Ozploitation boom. I mean, just to run it down real quick, Everett DeRoche wrote Road Games, Long Weekend, Patrick, Fortress, Storm Warning, Snapshot, Harlequin, Frog Dreaming, which is a personal favorite of yours. You know, Wind Rider, Visitors. Like he's
up to Storm Warning.
Yeah, Storm Warning was like, wasn't that a script that he had in the drawer for
like
years?
Wouldn't surprise me. It isn't. There's no modern touches.
Basically, got made by Jamie Blanks because that's almost like his Wolf Creek to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
But it's adapting a screenplay by one of the biggest voices inside of the Ozploitation boom who was kind of always around back to the days of like Brian Trenchard Smith,
yeah,
you know, and like Turkey Shoot. So like that's the thing is that if you've ever watched Mark Hartley's Not Quite Hollywood, like that's the best primer when it comes to this type of stuff is that it really is almost like a living syllabus of what you should watch if you're trying to get into like Ozploitation, like genre cinema.
Well, and that's kind of actually how I reverse engineered a lot of the movies that I love.
I feel like that's how a lot of people who came
to this stuff did. We'd all seen Mad Max, we'd all seen Road Warrior, Thunderdome. I'd seen Frog Dreaming, also known as The Quest in the United States. Like that was just kind of randomly because I found it at a video store.
Sure.
Hey, Henry, we'll talk about it later. Henry Thompson's in it. Okay, cool. We rented it. But like it wasn't stuff that I always knew about. And I watched that documentary and I think that's when I'd heard of Razorback, but I watched it shows clips and I said, that's Razorback. Like it's so like
that movie looks insane.
It was visibly beautiful. It just looks like, you know, very striking, right? Crazy, like again, neon colors, Michael Manny kind of light, like blue light shining through, or it's like again, like Ridley Scott kind of Blade Runner light shining through, spinning fans, smoky
atmosphere,
a lot of fog machines. That's how I found that and a bunch of other stuff. And I think what I love about Australian cinema is kind of what I love about Korean like genre cinema as well, is that I'm rarely disappointed. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
What we get here in the States, if it's made it this far, is it's probably intense, crazy, and I'm going to at least have something to talk about, even back to like the 70s. And you know, you mentioned like, you know, Greg McLean, like, huge fan of Wolf Creek 1 and 2, and monstrous fan of Rogue.
Yeah.
I mean,
which I revisited for this recording.
And you
too.
Liked it, right?
It's great.
It's just like, and they also had Weta do the special effects for that movie. So there's this amazing confrontation with the Croc in this like 13th Warrior-esque like cave. It's like man versus beast.
It's the crocodile has a personal murder cave.
It's fucking insane. I stole it for a script I wrote, but I'm like, who fucking cares?
And also, like, Rogue has one of the great like hindsight casts of all time with Radha Mitchell,
yep,
playing the world's hottest boat tour guide. And then Sam Worthington, right before he's in Avatar, basically.
Yeah, right before.
And, like, he plays the asshole who turns out to be the hero. And you also have John Jarrett, who is, like, not only a link to the Ozploitation of old, but is also the big bad in Wolf Creek.
Well, and a link to Peter Weir. I mean, this guy, yeah, he was in fucking Picketing and Hanging Rock. You know, like, he was one of the stars. What was Next of Kin? He's
right
in that, too. You know, another great.
Well, in Dark Age, yeah, my favorite, yeah, like where we're talking about crocodile movies, is Dark Age. He plays the anti-poacher,
yep,
kind of hunter who's there to preserve the crocs. And that's the thing, is that like Dark Age is the one that earned almost like the notorious reputation after Not Quite Hollywood, because that was the one that Quentin Tarantino appeared for and drop the quote, if you release this movie in theaters now on 2,000 screens, it'd make like a couple million dollars. And you watch it and you're like, well, Quentin, calm yourself.
It's good.
It's not fucking good. It's really good. But it's also just good for kind of like the heads if you're into this sort of thing.
Right. Well, and we were talking kind of off mic about like, when I watch Razorback, and again, the Umbrella 4K, the restoration is one of my favorite things of the last couple of years in terms of just like taking a movie that's already beautiful and just taking it to that next level.
Right.
I mean, and with those colors, the HDR, it bleeds off the screen, the blues, the red, the oranges of the sunsets and sunrises of the outback. I mean, it's truly like a singular movie, but I watched that movie and we've talked before about when, you know, I watch movies like The Abyss and I'm like, this is my favorite movie in the world while I'm watching it. I wouldn't go that length for Razorback, but it just fills me with such joy and glee that a fucking monster movie can look this good and have this much character to it. It is a curio. Like, I can't believe this movie even fucking exists.
Well, legendarily, it's like when Steven Spielberg saw Razorback, he apparently, you obviously, like, you'd have to ask him about this to
right
actually verify.
I'll ask him later.
Yeah, sure. Just call him up. But apparently he did call up Russell Mulcahy and was like, how did you do some of the shots in like the walkabout sequence where the boyfriend basically goes on his psychedelic journey across the Australian desert, because he didn't know how he got some of those visuals. That's how beautiful this movie is at certain points.
Well, and it's so funny there. I love that Spielberg has been a lot. Universal, not so much, but Spielberg has been very open to Jaws, quote unquote, ripoffs, because he famously said that Piranha is his favorite. You know, he's like, I think he even told Joe Dante's like,
yeah,
someone's going to do it. This is the best. And obviously they know each other since then.
Not Enzo Castellari's Great White.
No.
Or but The Last Shark.
I like that shit. But I think he's a very similar thing from Mulcahy is like, I think he appreciates. And what's so interesting, you think about Jaws exploitation, is we did a whole episode on shark movies, and we didn't dive too deeply into Jaws, but that, you know, Spielberg with the birth of the blockbuster and then Lucas is like they were elevating B plots, right, to a classy, big budget, better script, better actors.
Well, and Ridley too.
Yeah, and Ridley, yeah, and you get that, you know, you get that with definitely with Alien. or even Blade Runner, right? Of just like, this could have been just like a Corman movie. These are all Corman plots with a huge budget. And I would put that, I would put Razorback in a similar thing, but still has, none of those films are as zany as Razorback is weird. And I think what I keep thinking about when I watch this movie, and you and I both watched a lot of Ozploitation as well, is that I've never been to the Outback. I would love to go, for real. I want to go to Australia. We should go together. We probably have a great time, right, if we make it back. But
I have been to Australia, just not the Outback.
Okay, but I've heard amazing things about both, and I have friends from Australia, and is the way this movie depicts it, specifically with the two kind of lecherous guys who are the reason for the woman dying, partly, is you have almost like it's already Mad Max land. Even though this is like modern day 1980s outback, there is this sense of people live in a mix of squalor and like post-apocalyptic. Hey, like, we don't have normal running water. We have a weird shower. Even the nicest place is the blonde hair's shower, and it's an outdoor thing that you pull out with like a, you know, a pin. It has this sense of like, we're the Wild West out here. And I think it's what kind of adds some really amazing, again, I don't know if that's real. I don't know.
I think it definitely is, because I mean, like, even when they talk about the productions of some of these movies, like take George Miller and the original Mad Max, is they're shooting with no permits, more or less like stuntmen, sort of. Like, and like guys who are just willing to basically die to get the shot, you know? So like the way, not quite Hollywood, outlines the way that Ozploitation kind of came to be is that there were no rules. It was just people being like, you know, how do we represent our culture, but do it in like the most entertaining fashion possible?
Yeah. And I like that, because it is, you think again about how so many films of that era mimicked the plot of Wake and Fright in some way. I mean, even the original Mad Max is, it's the whole, or even it's almost like a Deliverance, a flip on Deliverance, right? Of, you're not supposed to be here. You're from the city. And these are like the rural folk. And they know who you are, and they're gonna take you out. But what I think is unique about Ozploitation is most of them have a section of, we're gonna get you drunk and have fun, and it slowly turns into something more nefarious, right? Because you have that in Wake and Fright of just like the drinking, and then the scene with Donald Pleasance, basically a rape scene. And with this too, you have these two punks who like, they don't know that he's the husband of the woman that they helped basically kill in a way, or abandon to be killed by the Razorback. But you have that same thing of like, have a drink, you know, and they just fucking leave.
Chug a beer.
And they leave him out there in the fucking outback, you know, like basically to die.
Well, that and the other movie that I think about a lot is another one written by Everett DeRoche, is Long Weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Where it becomes about a couple trying to mend their relationship by going out into nature, and because they're basically assholes, like, nature takes its revenge on them the entire time. And the way DeRoche writes it is that you never know if it's supernatural or if it's just coincidence the entire time. But the thing is, the key element is people who are civilized getting away from civilization itself. And then once you're out there, anything can happen. Again, it's the Wild West. You're at the mercy of what the elements and the gods determine.
Well, and you think about, we're not talking Ozploitation here, but Peter Weir's the king of that too. I mean,
sure.
Picnic Hanging Rock is that. I mean, you have that mysterious quality of like, you're not sure where these women went, but it's the idea of going back to the past, this primordial rock, right? It's like there, and they go, and they're never seen again. It's the unknowable, unsolvable mystery. Or even think about Last Wave, I feel
that,
like.
That was the one I was going to bring up, too.
The mixture of science and mysticism, right? And all the way up to, like, the sense of magic mixed with nature, Master and Commander, all the way to the way back.
Right.
You know, as well. It's that kind of like he anthropomorphized.
Or even Mosquito Coast with Harrison Ford. Absolutely. When he starts making American movies.
Yeah, absolutely. That he's kind of like speaking, you know, there's a sense of karma too,
yeah.
Especially for that one of like, oh, you thought you could tame nature. You thought you were your civilization could take root out here. And you can't.
Well, and also, like, the strange thing is, when you watch Hartley's documentary, is that a lot of the people interviewed in it hate on Peter Weir.
Yeah, I can see it.
Because they see it as, like,
elevated.
The only export when they were trying to make movies were these art films that were, like, heavily respected and possibly, like, were up for possible Academy Awards and everything.
With the biggest star in the world, Harrison Ford.
Well, yeah, even I mean, before like, yeah. that, it but, was, like, yeah. The Picnic at Hanging Rocks
right.
and The Last Waves. The stuff that's now in the Criterion Collection.
Correct, yeah.
You know, but even Peter Weir, I think the thing that the documentary misses or maybe even cuts out in, like, a bit of judicious editing is that Peter Weir made The Cars That Ate Paris.
And The Plumber. Both, like, kind
which,
of genre.
Which are both super weird genre movies that are linked to, like, George Miller and Brian 100%. Trenchard Smith as much as anything else. Because, like, The Cars That Ate Paris is, like, his version of, like, the weird, like, Mad Max car culture that would show up in both, like, Miller's, you know, Mad Max movies, and then also, like, Dead End Drive-In.
Yeah, exactly. And I rewatched that, which I loved.
It's incredible.
It's such a... Well, and Trenchard Smith is this guy who, like Everett DeRoche, like, if you... Three times out of four, if you're watching an 80s, like, exploitation movie from Australia or the 90s, it's probably Brian Trenchard Smith.
Yeah.
And
like
or
Turkey Shoot.
Yeah.
Which is like with Steve Railsback, it is like one of the great weird. It's almost like a battle royale, like precursor in the 70s, but it's so brutal and it's so violent. But like Brian Trenchard Smith was also like the fucking champion of the stuntman because he made stuff like The Man from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Where he brings, you know, Jimmy Wang Yu over to make a kung fu movie in the Ozploitation mold and even has George Lazenby after his Bond run be the bad guy in it. But, like, if you watch that movie, it's clear that everybody was sort of making a different movie at the same time.
Yeah.
And it just kind of came together in the editing. And, like, Brian Trenchard Smith is totally like, Jimmy Wang Yu... terrible human being. Should have never come here.
It's funny to watch those, like, but you have people, too, who came from that world who went on. I mean, again, like, Mulcahy very quickly came to the States, you know, does Highlander, which is, I'm not sure how big of a hit it was, but culturally significant, you know.
I mean, it spawned a whole franchise.
Yeah, and a TV series and now a remake, supposedly, that Chad Stahelski's doing maybe. And
that's apparently his next movie.
I hope so. And I guess like Henry Cavill was attached for a while. I'm like, that sounds fucking cool. Like I would watch that movie.
Sure, why not?
But I think you obviously
who's the queen who does the soundtrack?
Oh fuck.
In the modern age. I have my pick. It's like My Chemical Romance doing the soundtrack for the new fucking Highlander movie sounds great.
I would go all like synthwave and shit and get like, I know they're not huge, but like Gunship or like get like Cold,
sure.
Cold Cave. Like do like the Crow remake.
Yeah.
Like that, the reboot. That kind of like
which
real.
Which Stahelski's already into.
Exactly. So go like
with
real
all the
like
Castlevania stuff and whatever. And
yeah, 100%. I think. But then you have, obviously, Peter Weir, like you said, came from that world. George Miller making hundreds of million-dollar movies with, I mean, obviously, Happy Feet, animated movies, but to the sequels to Mad Max, coming over and, like, really breaking big, that I think that it's similar what we're seeing with people from, you know, Indonesia. You know, or people make Indonesian films like Gareth Edwards or you know, Timo, you know, coming over and like say, hey, I'm cutting my teeth over here where the rules seem a little laxer. Our movies are a little bit more insane. Hey, come do this sequel. Is that fair?
The difference being neither Gareth nor Timo had a Mel Gibson.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, Ico's not Mel, but he's a star.
He's not Mel.
You're right. Like, but he's a star. But...
Like, because between Peter Weir and Gallipoli and then the Mad Max movies, like, they really mint Mel Gibson as a star.
And You're the Living Dangerously.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like they bring him over to the United States and he becomes fucking, you know.
Mel Gibson. Yeah.
He's in the Lethal Weapon movies. Like, I think that definitely helps along the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's a true movie star, even in the original Mad Max. You're like, oh, fuck. You know, and then Gallipoli, too. I mean, Gallipoli's a fucking gut punch.
It's such a good movie.
Like, I mean, I know we're talking.
Also, feels like forgotten these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's like another Australian movie that I adore is Breaker Morant.
Oh man,
holy! Bruce Beresford made one of my favorite American movies, which is Tender Mercies. I've talked about that before. I watched Breaker Morant for the first time last year, and I was bawling my fucking eyes out.
It's so fucking good.
It is. That is a full on like, and a really complex movie too, because you have the idea of like. You're rooting for soldiers who basically killed their like captured soldiers. I'm like, what? And at the end, you're like, it really gets you into a very strange headspace, but a beautiful film, an absolutely beautiful film.
Well, it's also sort of like Ted Kotcheff would come over and do Wake and Fright before he did First Blood,
right.
But he would also do Uncommon Valor, too.
Yeah.
So, like, he's carrying a lot of that exploitation, even, like, DIY influence back into the American movies he makes. And then Trenchard Smith also does Siege of Firebase Gloria. So, like, these guys kind of all had war in their blood to a certain degree,
right.
To where, like, they wanted to represent that kind of spectacle and men on a mission, saving each other, saving civilians. But to your point, like, Breaker Morant is all about, like, these morally ambiguous, like, soldiers that you have to find a way in to empathize with.
No, and that movie is a full-on, like, it's just showstopper. And I think what's so interesting is, like, again, to the point of whether I'm watching Ozploitation or more dramatic Australian film, like, it is just really fascinating. And you also, I don't want to get too heavy into this, but you think about, like, films, one of my favorite Australian films, The Proposition, much later, 2006.
Oh,
yeah. You know, John Hillcoat, written by Nick Cave, is, that one's dealing with, like, the birth of Australia. The idea of this was, you know, a prison colony. And
yeah.
So many people... is that you have that very violent past, but also you have, similar to America, a very tumultuous, like, colonial relationship with the Aboriginal people. So it's like it's like the Wild West times 10. Like, imagine the Wild West if all the people who weren't there were originally criminals.
That was my favorite movie of, what, 2006,
2006.
Or whatever came out?
Oh, my, I still love that movie so much.
I remember seeing that down at the Ritz in Philly and, like, completely losing my fucking mind over it.
Yeah, I was my first summer after I graduated in 06, and I was living in Columbus, Ohio, and they had a little art theater walkable from where I lived, and it was $5 if you still had your student ID, and I wasn't a student, but I still used it. And I saw shit like Down in the Valley with fucking Edward Norton, which I didn't love, but then I was like, oh, cool, Proposition, I like Nick Cave. And I just was like floored by that movie. And it's Hillcoat's best. I don't think he's made a better film.
He's never quite gotten there.
Yeah.
You know, even doing The Road,
Cormac
McCarthy adaptation, it's interesting, but it never reaches the heights of The Proposition, because The Proposition, for as much as it's based in the Australian outback and deals with Australia's kind of tumultuous history, is that it feels filtered through the films of, like, Sergio Leone. You know, like, he's very much playing with these mythic, dirty, dusty kind of spaghetti westerns and being like, what's the Australian version of this? But that's kind of what makes it classic Ozploitation, is that it's an Australian filmmaker looking at another subgenre or genre and being like, what's our version of this?
Well, it's also, I mean, like, for both, definitely for Hillcoat, like, and supposedly he is doing it before Cormac passed. That was the plan, is to do Blood Meridian. And then,
right.
Like, this is basically, he's like, well, if I can't do Blood Meridian, this is my movie. Like, he was very clear about that. And now it seems like he may get to actually do it. We'll
Incredible
see.
Incredible John Hurt performance in The Proposition.
I mean, too. And my favorite Guy Pearce role, I think. I think he's absolutely insane. A very scary, what's Houston?
Danny Houston.
Danny Houston. Great Ray Winstone.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Sexy Beast.
Emily Watson. They're both like the whole. And again, you have that very Australian idea, like a Western, of trying to build civilization in a wild place. I mean, you have those shots of their little villa they've built in the middle of the outback, you know, but they have, she's trying to cultivate a garden out there. They're trying to live in their very English way. When it's very clear that he's been exiled here, you know, it's
right.
Like he did something
this
wrong.
This is a punishment.
And he's British, but he did something wrong, you know, on the continent and has now been sent out here to try his best. But I mean, another movie that makes Australia look like hell on earth, flies, alcohol, heat, sunburn, cracked lips, the whole, you know, whole thing.
Now, how did you come to Razorback for the first time? Do you remember seeing it?
No, I mean, I think I watched it when I was younger, because so there was this whole era when I lived in, so in the summers I lived in Wisconsin, and it was before I started working. I worked at a grocery store every summer, and I grew up in Indiana. My parents would go up there for the summer, and they're like, hey, like, kind of my payment would be, my mom was like, I'll rent you whatever from Family Video. They had one over like 30 minutes away where she was taking summer classes in art, and so I would just make lists. I would watch like AFI's like craziest horror movies, like, you know, or craziest sci-fi or action. I would make a list off that and say, rent me if they have it, all of this. And I think that's when I first saw The Howling, shit like that, which is one of my favorite werewolf movies. And I think that's when I first saw it. But I will say, after watching the doc, I went back to it. And that's when I was like, this is one of my movies. And they also had that, it was that great Warner Archive.
That's,
DVD was the first time I think I saw it where it looked good.
I think that's how I first saw it.
Yeah,
that's at least my
great cover,
my
the
best memory of seeing it is the Warner Archive. I think even burned when they used to do like
yep, that's what it was.
Movies on demand.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And then they did a Blu-ray of it, mm-hmm. and that was the best way to see it before Umbrella just did this 4K, which made it, you know, it really made you kind of appreciate what a visual masterpiece the movie is.
No, it's a, like, I mean, we had a, I think it was our friend Brandon Struzny who had posted about it one point about just like a horror, or like a, basically a Jaws ripoff has no right to look this good. And it's like four shots, and a lot of them are from The Walkabout.
Right.
And that's the sequence where you're like.
But well, I mean, even the conclusion in that, what is that, a dog food factory?
It's a dog food where they use kangaroo meat.
Yeah, poached kangaroo meat to like grind into dog food.
Petco.
It becomes like this industrial nightmare where this pig is basically hunting these poachers and the boyfriend in the middle of this like factory.
Yep.
And it's insane because you sit there and you go, is this a set? Did you find a factory? Like, how did you do this?
Well, it weirdly reminds me of when we did the Stephen Hopkins episode, another Australian, of Dangerous Game, you know, where it takes place in that mall or the shutdown mall. And a similar thing where you're like, wow, this all looks a lot better than it's supposed to, you know. And I would put, you know, it's so interesting how similar. And I know a lot of my Australian Kiwi friends would be angry about the comparison, but like, you know, you think about, you have South African, which is similar as well. You think about Richard Stanley, like Hardware feels like an Ausploitation movie to me. That weird, it's kind of an American style sci-fi movie, but with gonzo and strange with its
and
whole.
And DIY,
but also like, the stuff that's supposed to look good looks good, like some really good special effects.
But also with the weird industrial soundtrack and everything, like, I don't think anyone would be mad at you. I mean, Dust Devil is kind of the same way.
Yes, yeah.
To where it just feels beamed in from another dimension, a lot like how like a bunch of these Ozploitation movies feel.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, before we get to questions, because I feel like, you know, we're going to really run through the gamut there on that section. Like, What is your favorite, like, Mulcahy movie outside of Razorback?
I mean, I love Highlander. I mean, that was a movie I grew up on. My brother and I were obsessed with Highlander. We had it taped off TV. Remember when I first bought my first VHS of it from, like, Sam Goody in the mall? I spent $25 on it. But I'm like, yeah, fuck it, right? I love Highlander. I love the music. It's one of my favorite Queen music. I think Lambert is a weird star. I also love the...
He is strangely charismatic in that movie.
Yeah, lots of different places. You know, like his, like, you're like, he's, you know, and you have, you know, fucking Sean Connery playing a Spaniard. Clancy Brown, one of my favorite Clancy Brown roles. I mean, as the Cargan, like, but it's also that weird thing that you see it in Razorback, and then it's like the budget he got clearly for Highlander, that opening scene at the wrestling match is like these floating camera shots. And I'm like, I don't know how, like you said with Razorback, I don't know how he did a lot of this. Like, a lot of it's just so beautiful. And it's weird and it's kind of dumb as fuck too. Like,
nothing deep about this movie.
Yeah, but I also, like, it's really sentimental in the best way. Like, there's not a cynical bone in this body, in the movie's body. Like, it's so straightforward. The Queen stuff elevates it.
Brian May-esque synth score.
It's great. And some good action. It all looks amazing. All the stuff in the Highlands is like the where he's training with Ramirez, and or the scene where Cargan kills Ramirez, and it's like the lightning striking that fucking castle is falling apart behind them before he decapitates him. It's really epic. Like, 80s, like, I put it with, like, movies like Kroll or, like, Willow, that 80s, like, hard kind of fantasy vibe.
It feels like it should be painted on the side of a van.
No, 100, dude, it seriously deserves to be, like, a D&D campaign, is what it feels like.
I would go with Ricochet. I love as Ricochet. Mine. Like, it's just Denzel, yeah. John Lithgow, which, I mean, it's not Ozploitation, but, I mean, those who haven't watched The Rule of Jenny Pen yet is really, like, the return of Lithgow playing, like, a Brian De Palma-esque, like, psycho. Also has Jeffrey Rush, one of Australia's kind of, like, great actors.
It's a masterpiece. I think it's honestly a masterful horror thriller. It's
nasty.
But I watched it with my girlfriend, and we're 10 minutes in. She's like, this is sad and dark. And
I don't like this.
And I go, do you want to stop? She goes, no, I'm invested. Let's keep going. And then we both were like, that was a great movie. But, like, I know you, the one seeing you, I don't want to see your thunder, but at the table,
mm-hmm.
the shin scene.
Shin scene and the assault.
The assault is, but it's also like, you know, we're watching a person that you and I both equally, I think, love, John Lithgow, especially when he's off the leash. So I know it's Lithgow.
It's real Raising Kane.
I know he's playing a role, but I forget that when I watch this movie. He's so fucking terrifying. And it's a great script. One of our favorite movies from Sundance, when we got the Sundance Pass, Coming Home in the Dark, same filmmaker. And you had made the point, again, to quote you, but like, very literary filmmaker.
Right.
There's some brains to it, but also both are, like, very shocking.
Yeah. Not for the squeamish at all.
No, but worth it.
Want to get to questions?
Let's do it.
All right.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe. Here we belong. Fighting to survive in a war with the darkest power.
We're back with questions about Razorback and our Ozploitation favorites. Martin, top five Ozploitation movies ever, go.
Oh, man, this is tough. And I was just looking at a list, which is probably not even comprehensive, but...
Not counting the Mad Max movies.
Yeah, I was going to say. I say we leave those out. They're also, especially the recent ones, are Hollywood in my mind. They're, mm-hmm. they're huge, right? Number five, I'm going to go Blackwater. Andrew Trauke. I think is his first feature. He did that before. He did The Reef, which we did a partly episode on with the shark movies. He's very good at these like low budget, but also they look amazing, very limited location. And it's basically about two women and one of their husbands go out on a boat into the mangrove swamps of Australia. A giant croc or even a normal croc flips their boat. Two of them climb up in a tree. The guy's dead. And it's just an hour and a half of survival. Pure survival movie.
Kind of like Rogue, where they're all stranded on like a little island.
Right. But like Rogue is like bigger budget than that.
Oh, where sure.
You get like, you know, and both of them.
That's more mean the setup.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But both of them dealt with. Weta did special effects for both, which is really cool. So obviously, New Zealand company, but they're, I guess, very loyal to that area of the world and they'll hop in and help. Number four, I'm going to go Frog Dreaming, which we were mentioning earlier. Fascinating movie. In America, released as The Quest, I believe. I mean,
yep.
I saw it as The Quest.
What the Kino Lorber disc is.
Right. Great cover. It's Henry Thomas from right after he did E.T. And it's very clear. This was Brian Treasure Smith, also Everett DeRoche, doing a there. How do we get the kids in the theater? Hopefully crossover too. We're going to fly this kid out to Australia. And
Trenchard Smith had also done kids movies before with like BMX Bandits, which is one of the earliest like Nicole Kidman movies.
Exactly. I was at a bar last week that was showing that strangely with a bunch of bike people.
Severin put that out of all people.
Yeah. But this is a great one. I think honestly, it's hard for me to separate nostalgia from like quality, but I grew up on this movie. And the basic plot is Cody Warpole is the name of Henry Thomas. He's supposed to be an American. His parents have died, and he's living with his dad's best friend in basically near the outback or more in the wooded areas of Australia. And there's a legend of a monster in this quarry. And it's a full-on, you know, teen kid adventure movie, Goonies-esque, of what's in there, what's killing these people. I honestly don't want to ruin it for people. I think it really holds up. I'm a big fan of this movie.
I've never seen it.
I think you'd love it. It's really sweet. It's got a lot of heart to it. Some really bad ADR for everybody, even Henry Thomas. But
to cover up the accents?
No, they all have thick accents. It's just like, I think they shot out in location. So it's it's like probably, it's pretty bad ADR. But it's a really, really great movie. Number three, I'm going to go Rogue. I love another. I like Crocs.
Crocs.
This movie I've watched a lot. Really great cast. Really, really honestly scary. Like some good deaths in it as well. Mm-hmm. Also, we forgot Michael Vartan, who was big on Alias at the time. That's kind of where he got his start. He's the American. He plays an American who comes there to.
He's a travel writer.
He's a travel writer, and he gets stuck doing this like. Right up on, you know, I think he's kind of like the end of his rope. But a movie that's like very, again, you're like, you watch it, you're like, oh, this doesn't have to be this good. Again,
right.
Which I think is a running thing with Australian films for me through Ausploitation is like, oh, wow, you really elevated this to like something I want to watch over and over again.
It almost kind of feels like in the 70s when you had guys like Francis Ford Coppola and Scorsese making movies for like Roger Corman.
Yeah, Dementia 13.
Where it's like this was their only outlet
yeah.
to try and like lily pad to like another level.
Yep. And then honestly, I'm going to go for number two. I'm staying with the same director. I think Wolf Creek fucking rules. I'm honestly tied. I like two as much as one. One had a bigger budget, more gore, more deaths. I think two had a bigger budget, more gore, more deaths. But and many years later, like what, like 8 years later, I think it came out.
It was total cash.
Crazy. And they did the TV series as well. I think the original, though, I think John Jarrett is genuinely terrifying in this movie. He's also
he's
again
great.
That Australian thing we're seeing a lot of, like they're joking with you at first. You know, they really like lower your. Oh, hey, we're having some beers. We're having a good time.
Just hanging out, mate.
We're hanging out, mate, and it goes bad. And also the kind of cosmic nature of where they are, and like it really goes all the way. Goes full Texas Chainsaw, too, of like
yeah.
trying to get out of this
he
place.
He literally crucifies a dude.
And he chops his dick off. You see a guy, mm-hmm. and he just throws it away like it's nothing. And then number one's Razorback. That'll always be my number one.
Razorback.
Yeah, how about you?
Well, before I do mine, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Is Animal Kingdom David Michaud's kind of first breakthrough movie with an incredible
cast?
Yeah. That even got, you know, Jackie Weaver an Academy Award nomination. Does that count?
No.
Or is that too arty?
I think it's too arty. Like, I was looking at a list just now on, like, Wikipedia.
Because I'd never seen it until we were doing research for this. It's just one of those movies that missed me completely. And I watched it, and I was like, holy fucking shit. This is incredible.
I saw it randomly when it first came out. It was on DVD at the video store. And I rented it. And I was like, who is David Michaud? And I counted the days till The Rover came out. Now, that feels like Ozploitation to me more.
Yeah, it's more in the tradition with all the car culture stuff.
Yeah, and kind of post-apocalypse. It's like low-key Mad Max is what I call that movie, right? And a great Guy Pearce role and a very good Robert Pattinson role, too. Kind of in a similar part to Good Time, I think.
Here's my next question for you. Does Dead Calm count with Sam Neill, Nicole Kidman, and Billy Zane as a complete psychopath?
Yes, and I'm mad I didn't mention that as one of my top five. Because
that would be my number five.
I love that movie so fucking much.
For those who have never seen it, kind of mid-'80s, mid to late
80s, 89.
It's one of the movies that really launched Nicole Kidman.
Billy Zane.
I think she even got discovered off of that and was put in Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
But it's about a couple kind of like Long Weekend who are mending their marriage.
Yeah.
They're on a trip. Their boat starts
it's
to
Sam
sink.
Sam Neill. Yeah.
Yeah. Sam Neill's in it, which ties it to Possession, which is one of the great kind of couples breaking up movies in a way.
The ultimate.
And then Billy Zane is a psycho that they take on board. The boat starts sinking and it becomes a struggle for survival. This movie is fucking incredible. So, like, I would count that personally as one of the great kind of Ozploitation movies.
Yep.
Philip Noyce directed it.
Yep.
Number four, I would go with Dark Age. I mentioned it before. It's the original Killer Croc movie. I think I prefer it to Rogue because it's more of an outback film.
More aboriginal,
than Rogue is.
Too. Get into
and,
that. Yeah,
and that's where I was going to go, is that there's a mysticism to it that connects it to kind of like Walkabout in the Nick Rogue movies. John Jarrett's incredible as the one kind of fighting for the preservation of these crocs. And like, it really does have this amazing animatronic, like giant killer croc at its center that's like a lot of fun to watch. Those who have never seen it, totally worth seeking out. I think like Code Red or somebody put a Blu-ray out of it like a long time ago. Number three, Thirst.
Oh, I love that movie.
Mentioned yet, which is a really idiosyncratic vampire film from Australia.
It's
about
like The Prisoner.
Yeah, it's strange. It's about this cult of doctors who are also vampires who are studying vampirism as a disease. They take them in, and explore this descendant of Elizabeth Bathory and how she's kind of integrated inside of this cult. Henry Silva, the nightmare-faced Italian exploitation, legend, is in this movie too. Like, I really, really love this film. I think it's incredible. It's kind of like nothing I've ever seen before. And if I was to pick something from this whole list, like, I would totally pick that. Where am I? Number three?
Number two.
Number two, Next of Kin.
Oh, it's so good.
The
Spooky.
Australian Shining.
Tangerine Dream score.
Exactly. Tangerine Dream score set at an old folks sort of like.
Weirdly pairs well
like
with Ospice. Jenny Penn.
Yeah, pairs well with Jenny Penn. Has an incredible atmosphere. Like, love this movie to death. It's another one in Not Quite Hollywood that Tarantino kind of rides hard for. And I remember seeking it out after watching that movie originally. Number one, honestly, I mean, Wake and Fright is number one. That's the best movie to come out of this entire bunch. And I remember watching it when Draft House Films and our buddy Shapiro did that restoration of it for Draft House Films.
Part of that?
Yeah, it was back when he was working for the company. I believe Evan Husney.
Yeah.
who was like one of his partners in crime there, was the one who really helped discover it and kind of spearhead the restoration there. But I remember watching that movie at one of my first Fantastic Fests ever, and like they gave us Shiners to like chug during it, and it was just an incredible experience. I'd never really seen anything quite like that movie. I mean, my number one is a film that connects us in a couple ways. And on revisiting it, like, I forgot how fucking good it was and, frankly, how horny it was. It's Patrick.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The Invalid Carrie ripoff, also written by Everett DeRoche.
Yep.
And directed by one of our great, you know, kind of the patron saints of this podcast, Richard Franklin. And also spawned one of our great bonding moments in seeing Patrick Lives Again. The
Patrick
Italian,
still lives.
Or
right,
Patrick
yeah.
Still Lives, I'm sorry. The Italian ripoff movie that's sort of like pornographic and psychotic.
Sort of?
Yeah, it is pornographic. it's completely out of its fucking mind, and I love that movie to death. But Patrick, it's hard to overstate like how good this movie is while also being like it's also bad. Like you watch it and you're like, okay, sure, but like it's a Carrie ripoff, but it's so horny, everybody's so hot in it, it's so entertaining, and like it's so well written. It's one of the perfect exploitation movies to kind of ever come out, and it's one of the perfect ripoff movies. And every time I revisit it, I bought the 4K of it when Indicator just put it out, and like it's really hard to deny. Like it's just, it's one of the great works of exploitation cinema. I would ride for that every day of the week.
Don't you think that's what unites Ozploitation then is, you remember when, I mean, you remember this, when Grindhouse came out, the movie Grindhouse.
Right.
Their whole thing was, what if Grindhouse movies were as good as the poster, right?
Right.
I feel like that's Ozploitation for the most part, is the majority of Ozploitation
they
stuff.
They are really
They're all good, and they're actually crazy, versus American shit where you're like Rotor, right? Where you're like, that looks like Mad Max. Look at that fucking cyborg. And it's shot on like a peanut butter sandwich.
That is the great point you've kind of made about these movies as a whole, is that like you watch them and you get the feeling during most of them is that you're like, these movies have no right to be this good.
Yeah.
Like they're acted
with Razorback as the definition.
They're written incredibly. They're shot great. Like all of these guys would not all of them, but the majority of them would graduate to like go make American movies. And like, you know, Richard Franklin would go on to make Psycho 2, and he made Road Games, and like one of the great
that's almost top, probably top five for me too. I should have put it in there.
Yeah, that should be in there too. But like I was trying to highlight movies that are a little lesser known.
Right.
But like Franklin had a great career after this.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Trenchard Smith had a great career after this. You know, even Philippe Mora would go on to make stuff like The Howling 3, which was an Australian production and totally bonkers.
Yeah,
but like
the marsupials.
Yeah, it crossed over into America, and that movie is out of its fucking mind. I love it to death.
Breed Apart's great. He did Rucker Hauer and
Powers
Booth. Love that movie.
Yeah, and Mad Dog Morgan.
Yep.
The Australian Western with Dennis Hopper. Like, he's a great director.
Bonkers.
Now, double feature, what would you pick to go with Razorback?
Okay, so there's obviously a lot. I want to do a creature feature, but we've talked about a lot.
I figured Rogue would be your first choice.
But I'm going to do one we haven't talked about.
Okay.
And that's Bait 3D. Have you ever seen Bait?
No.
So Bait, I think it's 2011. You got Sharni Vinson, I think Xander, what's his name? A lot of people who've now gone on to do Americans.
Xander Berkeley?
No, I forget his name, but he's a...
Watch my motherfucking television set.
He's a pretty boy who was like a young guy.
Okay.
And then Julian, what's his fuck, from Nick Tuck.
Oh, McMahon.
McMahon.
Who was just in The Surfer with Nick Cage.
Yeah, so he plays like kind of like anti-hero. Here's the plot. Shot in 3D or post-production 3D. I saw it regular on DVD. I rented it from Family Video or whatever. Family Video. But the idea was, it was during a huge tsunami. The same setup as Crawl. So a huge tsunami hits and it washes all these sharks into populated land. So all these people during this huge tsunami end up in a supermarket, and they are up on top of like the freezers and the shelves, and there are sharks in the aisles of the supermarket. but it fucking rules. Like, okay. Great practical effects, great CG effects. Again, I wish I could have seen it in 3D. Built kind of like Piranha 3D, built to be in 3D. A great, like, again, a movie you're like, oh, this could play on American screens and do fine. Like, the same quality as, like, Shark Night, which we both enjoy. But I just honestly want, there's just, I love also, another reason I love Ozploitation is so many of them are creature features when animals attack stuff, which I, you know, love. And I think that would pair very well with Razorback.
I'm going to do one that's almost like a B-side movie to where if you were to go see a double feature, it's like you get a really lesser-known film. And mine's Blood Moon from 1990,
which
is kind of like an Australian co-ed slasher film that really kind of follows the formula. It's at a girls-only kind of Catholic school called St. Elizabeth's. It's just about a stalker who starts basically like choking people out with barbed wire. There's nothing more to it than that. It's not a great film, but it's worth seeking out. Severin just put out a Blu-ray of it a couple of years ago, I want to say. And like, if you were to go see Razorback as the A-side, it would be a great B-side to just stay for after the fact.
Hell yeah.
Now, remake, series, would you do that with Razorback?
Yep. Yep.
Really?
100%. I would do a requel. I would
okay.
I would go nuts because you get... Dude, you get a requel for a fucking Town That Dreaded Sundown, right? Like, I think it would be cool to do one that would also that stands on its own two legs, that also attracts people to the original, right? So you do a movie, it's just like called Razorback or a series. But what I would do is do a full-on big budget back in Australia legacy sequel where that Razorback had babies, right? And it's full on like, it's in the it's
Razorbacks in the, it, with a dollar sign.
But it's but it's in the future, not the future, but the future. I mean, it's like modern day, and they're running rampant. So it's almost like post apocalyptic, kind of like what Avery wanted to do with Phantasm. Like it's like what if he won. So I would want to do a like full on monster movie with like again Razorbacks like aliens and there's a
maybe
lot,
with a Z Razorbacks
with a lot of them.
Yeah.
But I would get Mulcahy back to direct it. I would go back. I would get Dean Semler. I would say, hey, we're getting the whole crew back together. This would be if I had like the power of like a studio and I was
sure.
They're like, you can make whatever you want. I'm like,
I have $20 million to do whatever I want.
Yeah, and exactly that's exactly the size movie it would be. I would probably do it at a really cool. We were just talking about a movie we're going to do very soon of, like, Only Angels Have Wings of, like, this, like, depot where everyone lives and survives. And it's, again, post-apocalyptic. The Outback has been overrun with Razorbacks. And it's them, you know, for some reason they have to go out across the land to get something. Like, someone's sick or has a disease. And they have to, hey, we got to go over... across this, almost like Tremors, right? It's like just Razorbacks everywhere, like that vibe.
That sounds fucking cool.
I would watch that movie.
I can't beat that. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like,
I've thought a lot about this.
I have an answer, but it's not even worth offering up at this point because it's like, I would watch that movie immediately. So Face Melter, yay, nay?
I say yay. I think...
I would agree.
I think that while it's not the most action-packed, I've shown it to multiple friends and now my partner, and everyone's like, whoa. Like,
it's a movie where you're like... Again, to bring it back to the original point that you sit there and you're like, what? Why is this good?
Yeah.
Like, why does it look like this?
Yep, that's it. That's the definition of this, and as we've said, a lot of Ozploitation. And I it's based on a book as well, which I bought the book because I'm kind of obsessed. As you know, I get weird.
Is the book good?
I haven't read it. I just own it. Like, it's just sitting on my little paperback shelf. But I've heard it changed a little bit. I read the Howling book, which is completely different from the movie. But I think like the thesis of like if you take a stab and say, I'm going to try an Australian movie tonight, like 9 times out of 10, you're going to get it. I mean, did you finish Storm Warning?
Yeah,
so
it
like,
sucks.
But the beginning sucks. The end is like, whoa. And it's gory as fuck. Nope. I like that movie.
I don't like it.
I like it.
It's the wrong movie to bring up to end this episode because I watched it for the first time in preparation. I was like, nope.
No, not this one. I still love that movie.
Not a Jamie Blanks guy. Like, between that and Urban Legend, I'm like, eh.
You need to calm yourself right
now. I'm sorry.
Now.
I didn't want to end this on a negative note, but, like, you brought it up.
Let's end on a positive note.
I mean, like, a positive note is that if you want to watch, if you take away anything from this, is watch Razorback, watch Dark Age, watch Next of Kin, watch Thirst. Basically just run through a huge chunk of the Severin Films Blu-ray library, and you're going to be a happy motherfucker. Yep. You know, because it's just, they really have gone out of their way between them and Indicator, because Indicator just put out an Umbrella, yeah, too, who is putting out all of these great Blu-rays and 4Ks of these movies. Like, Indicator just put out Patrick, just put out Snapshot, which is also called The Day After Halloween, which, yep, is a great kind of slasher movie. You know, Severin put out Thirst. They put out Strange Behavior. They put out Next of Kin. Like, Dark Age, you can find.
Strange Behavior is great, too.
Yeah, Strange Behavior is incredible. Blood Moon is a Severin film. Like, you need to watch all of these. And then you get to the modern day where you start watching the Filippo Brothers movies, like Talk to Me and Bring Her Back. And then you have Dangerous Animals. And you could go back and watch Son Burns' other movies with The Loved Ones.
Oh, it's so
and,
good.
The Devil's Candy. And, like, there's just so much stuff to watch. We haven't even gotten to the Justin Kurzerkus movies. Like, The Order from last year, which he directed, is one of the great American films that's directed by an Australian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That is my top 10 favorite movie of last
Bird
year.
Bird Eater would be another one that, if you haven't gone out of your way, that Umbrella, I know, also put out, is like a great debut film from these filmmakers that's really uncomfortable and kind of like a modern version of Wake and Fright. Like, all of these films. We haven't even mentioned Stone yet, which Severin put out, which is one of the great biker movies of all time. Like, Ozboitation is such a rich kind of text and culture that you could spend, like I did, preparing for this. Like, I watched 35 movies for this episode, you know, and I barely got to touch on like any of them because, like, there's just so many of them. If you were to actually go in depth on all these films, this episode would be like 10 hours long.
Well, it's funny to compare it to like what we did, The French New Extremity, where that was a downer episode.
But yeah, even these are all fun.
Even at its most violent, these movies are all like goofy at a certain level, fun. I would say even the Filippo Brothers, like, they're especially Bring Her Back, really fucking intense,
yeah,
and dark, but it has this playful nature to it, and it doesn't drag you through the mud like some films do.
Well, Bring Her Back definitely does, but I'll say Talk to Me.
I'm trying to trick people. Everyone should see Bring Her Back.
Yeah, Bring Her Back. I mean, like, everybody who's kind of complained about this movie being such a dour slog, like, eat shit and die.
You're wrong.
Like,
you're wrong you're about wrong. Movies. Your taste is bad.
It's one of the best movies of 2025. Suck my ass. So, like, that'll be a good place to end our exploitation episode. Martin, this has been great.
Indeed.
We've been talking about this forever. Next up, we have Only Angels Have Wings, a Howard Hawks episode, which you have been begging me for 5 fucking years, it seems like, at this point.
One of my all-time favorite movies.
And I can't wait, because I've never fucking seen it, so it's going to be the epitome of a secret handshake episode.
Hell yeah.
So you have to tune in next and hear it then. Bye.
Bye.